Before I get started with this week's podcast, I wanted to give a special shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind body coach based out of Los Angeles. You might remember that she guest hosted this podcast back in January and came on live with me back last summer in August of 2021. Jeannie facilitates breath work to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and decrease pain. Are you having trouble calming the monkey mind? Well, she knows all about that. You see, it's not about controlling or managing your stress or your thoughts. Instead, it's about shifting and improving the relationship that you have with them. Jeannie spent 16 years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her physically and mentally exhausted. However, she healed herself completely and now is obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. Looking to decrease your negative self-talk, regulate your nervous system, and heal those TMS symptoms? Reach out to her on her website, JeannieColwin.com. That's JeannieColwin.com. She has only two spots left to work with her for this summer. So sign up for that free 30-minute consult to get more info and see if you'd be a good fit together. It's June 30th on the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and want to give a shout out to the patrons of the podcast. Go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast if you're interested in becoming a monetary supporter and helping keep the show available on the air for free for all the listeners around the world. So let me give a shout out to Kirk, Patricia, Emily, Brent, Paul, Amanda, Elise, Enda, Dominic, Sasha, Sylvie, James, John, Jason, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Anthony, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Bart. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. Again, go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast to learn more. Before we jump into an interview today, I've got Christy Zinjewski on the line. Her and I go for about 45 or so minutes, and this was really a treat because she's had two recoveries from chronic health issues with the TMS mind-body approach, and they are completely different health issues. So I think that's kind of cool because I feel like usually it's like a couple of different pain issues or could be some anxiety and bouts of depression. There's a variety of different things. These were completely different, and she had a light bulb moment, and I'm excited to get into that. Now, to give you a little bit of an update, what's going on with me, our cat, who we've had for 13 years, we got her. If you remember, we put Barkley down, euthanized him back in March. And then on June 22nd, so as I'm recording this 7 days ago, Stella walked out of our front door at about 7 o'clock and never came back. We've spent the last week making posters. Zoe and I have been crawling under decks and looking in bushes and knocking on doors and going to different adjacent neighborhoods, just trying to locate her. There's a local animal tracker in the Seattle area that hasn't gotten back to me yet, but I was reading a lot of his content. And one of the things that he had said, because initially I had thought once it had been a day or a day and a half or so, my immediate assumption was that she was attacked by a predator, a coyote or a raccoon or something like that. Very scared. I've canvassed the area, the places where coyotes and raccoons are known to hang out in our area, and haven't found a trace, no collar, no fur, no nothing. But it's interesting. He specializes in this in Western Washington. He's done thousands of cases. And the thing that he had said on his website is that it's a huge misconception, probably occurs less than 3% of the time. Stella was found on the side of a freeway in 2009 in pretty cold conditions. And she's definitely survived a lot in her life. She's got some alley cat in her. She's definitely a tough cat, but our family is pretty devastated. And for me personally, I can't really bring myself to do anything, post on social media, do much of anything. It's just been putting down two dogs in the last 2.5 years or so. I got to have closure because I was there for the end of their lives. But with this one, just literally seeing her walk out the door and assuming that she'll come back like she always has for the last 13 years, that's been really troubling. So hopefully by the time that you hear the next episode, she will have returned home. It's 7 days now at this point as I record it. And I'm kind of hoping that she's sort of in a hibernation point and she'll get hungry enough to where she'll have to return home. So if you've got a story of a cat that you've had that left and then returned home, I would love to hear about it. It's Eddie at themindandfitnesspodcast.com. Those kind of stories would really help me out right now. So pivoting quickly, Christy Zinjewski, thank you so much for joining me. This is a great podcast. Check it out. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and I'm here with, I want to make sure I get the last name right. I know you just told me, I spelled it phonetically, but it is Christy Zinjewski. Is that right?
That's correct, Eddie.
Good. So I'm very excited to talk to you, not just because there's a couple of layers to your background. You were referred to me by Rebecca Tolan, who was on the podcast a number of months ago, might even be a year ago now at this point. But one of the things that she told me is that you've got kind of a background in bodybuilding. And though this podcast is called the Mind and Fitness Podcast, it's 95% mind and 5% fitness. And the fitness in a lot of ways comes from me as a weightlifter. So I'd love to just know a little bit more about you. Where on earth are you calling from? And what do you do? What's your thing at this point in time? And then we'll go backwards.
Sure. So I'm in Missouri. Recently moved here from, maybe a year and a half ago from California. I was competing. Yeah, I do have a background. I was a professional figure competitor and world champion with the WNBF. So I competed for 12 years as a figure competitor and had a great career. But I've also, while I was doing that, I work for a university and I also have a coaching business. So I keep myself fairly busy.
Oh, cool. What in the university, like higher ed space, did you do?
I work for Bryan University in their general education department. I oversee all the, English, psychology, math classes.
Awesome. Cool. What did you go to school for?
My degree is in psychology and then my master's was in social work. So, I love the, how the mind, that's my thing. So this podcast is perfect because I love how the mind and the body interact and have spent a lot of time both just on my own and in my, in my studies, looking into this. So,
when I went into undergrad, I had just, there was only, I'm assuming this is still how it works, but when I went to school, you could sign up for classes, and the longer tenured student you were, the higher priority you had to actually like pick classes. And then the people mm-hmm. that were brand new, you sort of got whatever was left over what wasn't full. And I had no interest in anything psychology related. And the first class that like really made an impression on me in college was social psych. And I ended up getting enough credits to have a minor. I didn't formally file for the minor, but I had 45 or 50 credits in it, and it really caught my eye. Did you go into school thinking like I have this great interest in psychology, or did it just kind of fall in your lap like it did for me?
Oh, I love psychology. That's specifically why I went to school, was to study more, to learn more about, what makes people tick, how everything works. I think part of it too was, I had difficult time growing up and a lot of, people picking on me and whatnot. So I think part of it was also to give back and help coach other people through difficult times. Yeah. But it was totally my thing. I studied hypnosis, all kinds of fun things, just to like really get to like how do you affect the mind to then affect your life, your outlook, all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, for sure. And how how did you end up getting into, because, it's one thing to go to the gym and then it's a whole mm-hmm. nother thing to do figure. Probably the most, if not the most demanding, one of the most demanding in the segment. What kind of got you interested in that?
So I played volleyball in college, and kind of after college, it was just like, I didn't really have a sport, you know, it's hard to get people together when you don't have like a formal, you know, like that's what you're there to do is to play sports. So I was like kind of wondering, I don't really have anything. So I was just, you know, working out casually. And then I moved to Hawaii for a while. They have amazing avocados and macadamia nuts. I gained a lot of weight and I was like, I need to get in shape. And so part of it was like, I needed to challenge myself. Like, you're an athlete, what are you doing? So I got back in shape, and that was my goal, was to get on stage. And then, you know, looking into the sport, it's very saturated with drugs and, you know, lots of not healthy way. I mean, you know, all sports are kind of extreme. So I wouldn't say that any sport is really healthy, but, you know, there's lots of unhealthy practices. And so I wanted to make my mark in the sport by doing things as healthy as possible and coaching others. Cause I was also a personal trainer at that time to really be able to define themselves, you know, their bodies, their minds, and do so in a healthy way. And so kind of led me down that path for a while.
So that brings up an interesting, so I had someone on a couple of months ago, or maybe a few weeks ago, Lisa Schlossberger. She's in, Lisa Schlossberg. She's based out of San Diego, but when she was kind of describing her background, I had said to her like 5 years ago when I came up with this podcast and thought, here's kind of the direction that I want my life to go. I'm like, you're doing exactly what my design would be, where she went to school. She's a, I think she's either an LMSW or an LCSW. So she went to school for psychotherapy, but then also became a personal trainer and sort of interacts the two. And I think that's a really unique offering. So like you, when you've worked with clients in the past, and I'm speaking more to the fitness side, but also, you know, you have this incredible background of psychology as well. Like, what are some of the unique offerings or some of the unique angles that you take that maybe a typical fitness trainer wouldn't bring to the table?
So that's a great question. I think, you know, like I would say goal setting and stuff is typically what a lot of trainers do, but like from what I researched and all of the studies, I also researched a lot in neuroscience and how our brains need different kinds of stimulation. So a lot of, you know, fitness training is based on, you know, you do this many reps, you know, always, it's always bilateral training because you want to train the body evenly. And from a brain perspective, your body does not like even, you know, like necessarily bilateral movements. You know, if you even think about walking, you know, you do opposite arm, opposite leg. So we're never really working in a bilateral environment unless we're forcing ourselves to train that way. So part of it is also looking at the brain and its interaction, like, you know, from a neuroscience perspective, not a psychology perspective, but looking at that and saying, what kind of stimulation does your brain need in order to perform better? And so some of it may be by a unilateral training. So it's I've incorporated a lot of different tools to help clients in a lot of areas. I mean, I have people who just wanted to lose weight, and then I have people who competed professionally or just competed casually. And I love it all, because I just, my main goal is to help. Like, I don't have an agenda as a coach. My agenda is what does the client want to get better? And so how can we make them better and enjoy their life better? And so I've had a lot of clients actually go on to become coaches themselves, which is really rewarding when you get someone so excited about, you know, what they've gone through that they want to go and coach someone else.
I'm really curious on the, I had a fitness competitor. She was maybe like episode 3 or 4. And she had talked a lot about some of her more the negative experience that she had as far as like her, it developed a lot of food issues with her, body dysmorphia, like stuff like that. Like that was kind of the development. But one thing that I wish I would have asked her was like, cause we met in college and there was a period of time where, you know, you, like I'd mentioned earlier, you go from being somebody that just goes to the gym casually to somebody that actually wants to compete. And for an athlete really of any kind, once you venture into that, you may struggle for a little bit and you sort of feel like you're kind of taking 2 steps forward and then 5 steps back. And then it's almost like you hit a, like in the barrel of a baseball bat, and then things just start clicking. What have you, it's a little off base, but what have you tended to find as it relates to the mind and the body and working with somebody that is wanting to maybe become a fitness competitor, like what are those couple of things maybe that they were missing, you've helped them find or discover about themselves or whatever the case may be, to then they really start to get into stride? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because I do find with a lot of competitors and even myself is like after a competition, you do have a sense of body dysmorphia, and it's like you have this unrealistic expectation of how you should be able to perform and what you should look like. And, you know, if clients already have kind of in eating disorders was my focus and for my research that I did and for my master's degree. And so if you already have compulsive tendencies or kind of eating disordered behavior, competitions can actually exacerbate that for sure, both in men and women. So I would say like a lot of things that we worked on was just even stuff that, you know, with the TMS approach is like, how do you reset? How do you calm down the nervous system so you're not in this fight or flight? So we focus a lot on meditation, sleep hygiene. So how do you make sure that you have a good evening routine so that your body can sleep well and, you know, get into that parasympathetic state and really heal and rest from all of the, you know, abuse you do to your body in the gym and being on a very low calorie diet. And so I think it's really like, that's one of the things I focused a lot with my clients is yes, the diet's important, you know, what you're eating, when you're eating, the workouts, all of that's important. But if you don't have the recovery, if you don't have the ability to get your body back to, you know, we're not meant to be in a sympathetic state. And when you're dieting and you're training, you know, several times a day, your body's in a sympathetic state a lot. And so you have to really emphasize then how do you reset, whatever that is for them, you know? And so we worked a lot on that is, you know, how do you incorporate that and have that be just as important as the hard, you know, the physical training and the diet so that you can bounce out of a competition and not be completely destroyed.
Are some of the tips that you would give to somebody in that situation? I really like the idea of being able to create a semblance of balance because I do, Olympic style weightlifting training. And so it's snatch and clean and jerk and front squats and back squats. And, but everything is heavy. There's a deload every fifth week, depending on the program that you're in. But for me, I do like a deload every fifth week where I might dial down to say 60 or 70%, but that's kind of it. Other than that, it's just thrashing myself all year. Yeah. And a good balance approach that I gave to myself is kind of similar to what you're talking about, where I have an off season. Summer in a lot of ways is like, I focus a little bit more on conditioning and cardio. I dial back a day, more walks, just more kind of outside general stuff, ride my skateboard, ride my bicycle, like sort of just take advantage of that as an off season. But when you're working with somebody and you're kind of getting them to, you mentioned meditation, does some of it focus on, you finish your workout, let's say at 8 a.m., and then is it doing something immediately after to sort of dial yourself down a little bit? Or is it more habits that you do at different points of the day or throughout the day? Or like what are some of the tips that you have for that?
So I would say it's both. So a lot of the, so for some of my clients who tend to be more, you know, sympathetically dominant and they're go, 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 it's like part of their cool down is certain walking and breathing techniques. So by doing like long exhales, you're like calming the body down, making sure that, you know, you're breathing through your nose because breathing through your mouth can increase the sympathetic tone in your body. So doing that, even just simply walking and doing some breathing exercises can help just calm the body down. And so I would say it's after workout, but then periodically through the day. So can you do, you know, a 15-minute nap or meditation or relaxation? Some people don't like, you know, the thought of meditating. So find relaxation so that you can just let your body come down for a little bit. And then also having off days. So I have clients who wanted to train 7 days a week. And I was like, I know from personal experience that I was one of those people. Yeah. And then I was like, you know, you don't make the gains in the gym. You make the gains when your body's recovering. You know, you need the stress in the gym, but then you need the recovery so that your body can then go again and can be better the next time. And so part of it was, you know, some of my clients were like, okay, I can do 6 days, but I have to do 6 days. I'm like, all right. And so eventually, like over time, I've had some clients come back to me and they're like, okay, you know what? I finally listened to you and I took like maybe even a week off every now and then. Yeah. And my results are so much better. And so I was like, yep.
Yeah. You know, something that, and maybe you'll have some commentary on this. It's funny you're talking about this because when I was in college, you know, I had a full-time job, but then I had a full slate of classes. I had an internship, like, and I worked out constantly. And I usually would do 5 days a week. And what I found is that, and this is part of why I do a deload every fifth week, is that, and maybe I can drop this habit, but when I was in college, I would notice that every fifth week I would get sick. I'd get some kind of an illness. And then later on, sort of figure this was in the later part of college when life got even more stressful. But every fifth week I would just take completely off of the gym. It wasn't even like a deload. It was just, I'm totally off. And instead of finishing up work and going to the gym at 9 or 10 PM or whatever, I just go home and chill. And then I found out I was not getting sick after that. So I guess what would be, you hear somebody say that, what's going on? Is it just overtaxing? And that's kind of the brass tacks of it.
Oh yeah. So like I had the same thing. Like I would push and push because I had, you know, a full class load plus my sports. And then when we got to break time, I would always get sick because it was like I was pushing. My body was holding on till I could just finally let go. And then when I let go, it was like my body's like, I'm done, you know? And so like you, over time, I've been able to develop more rest. And sometimes, you know, because when you look at professional athletes, normally they actually can take months off after their season. Yep. Then they ramp up, you know, and so they have, so if you're in sports like you and I are, where it's kind of like, you know, you can do it year round if you wanted to, there's not that planned off time in there. You really have to be intentional about and listen to your body. And so with all of my clients, their rest periods or their off time is different. Some of them can be very, depending on, you know, how stressful the rest of their life is. Like you said, if you have all these other things going on, you may need more rest time because your body's not only dealing with the stress from your workouts, but then from all the other things in life and maybe not sleeping well or whatever. And then some people have, you know, they're kind of like not type A personalities, and they're, you know, they may have a lot going on in life, but they just, you know, they kind of take it in stride, and they may be able to not have as much of rest time and be able to do more in the gym because they don't have that stress from other aspects of their life.
So I used to do, I don't know if you've ever heard of Eat to Perform, but I used to do consulting work for them way back when they kind of first started as a company. This would have been 2013 or so. And I would work with clients for them. Like if they were too inundated with clients and needed extra help, they would pay me as a contractor. And one of the things that I would, when people would talk about how, you know, I'm working out 6 or 7 days a week, I'm weighing and measuring all my food, I'm following my macros, I'm not losing any weight, I'm not gaining any strength, and in fact, maybe I'm even regressing a little bit. And the example that I would always use is, think of like an MMA, let's just say a UFC fighter, entering a fight camp, and they have a pay-per-view that's coming up on December 1st. They do a 12-week fight camp, and then when the fight is over, there are several months of rest, just like what you describe. And that there's a reason to that, and there's also a reason that football is it's a 3 to 4 month thing. And then if you make it to the playoffs, it wraps in January, and then OTAs and mini camps don't start until April. So like, why should we expect to go hard 12 months out of the year? It's just not really sustained. And so when I would give people several examples like that, then it would kind of click and they would understand. And then they would, you know, add a day or add a couple of days additional of rest and do some off seasons. And then they were seeing really phenomenal gains in the gym. And like you'd said, that the gain is really coming in the recovery as opposed to when you're actually, you know, doing the, because, you know, you can only work out so many hours of the day. There's 24 hours in a day. Usually I'm going to be training for 60 minutes. Sometimes it might go to 70, 75. And some people might be crazy and do 2 hours or 3 hours, but you're still only talking about a very small portion of the full day. So what you're doing the other time certainly is very critical.
Yeah. And the more intense your training is, I tell my clients, the more intense your training is, the more intense your resting needs to be. If you're one of those people that does, you know, just goes into the gym, lifts a little bit, you know, you just want to stay active, you may be able to train 7 days a week because you're just doing, you know, a lower level of activity. But if you're really pushing, then you need to also have a higher level or a higher intensity of rest and recovery. And what are you doing? You know, I have a lot of clients who are like, well, I go do deep tissue massage. Well, that's kind of intense too. Like you need to do more chilling and less, you know, intense things.
Yeah. I remember I was talking back when I would get like really crazy sports massages and stuff like that. I remember talking to a CrossFit athlete and I had asked her about ART and she had said, ART is a little intense for me. And I remember I replied with something like, don't you want it to be intense? And she's like, not really. Because it is like a workout. You're going through 60 minutes with somebody just pummeling the shit out of you that's not necessarily a good thing either. You know, before we started rolling, you had to, because I had asked you about some of your background as it relates to TMS type work. And one thing I didn't know that you brought up, and I want to dive into this now, is that you'd said 20 years ago, you overcame a bout of back pain by using TMS work. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So I was competing I was playing volleyball in college, and I was also teaching, you know, fitness classes and whatnot. And I taught a kickboxing class, and, you know, afterwards my back really hurt and it was like, okay, you know, maybe I wasn't warmed up or whatever. So I just kind of like figured in a couple of days it would feel better, and it didn't. It got worse and worse. And I went and got trigger point injections where they were injecting some kind of, I don't know, anesthetic or something into trigger points and all over my body actually to try to release all the tension, and that didn't work. I did chiropractic work. I did all this stuff and it was just like nothing was making it feel better. And this went on for months. And then I went to a health food store and they had this woman come in and she was just doing some kind of thing about pain. And I was like, okay, I'll see what it's about. And so I sat in there and she said, oh, well, I need someone who's in pain now. And I was like, okay, I'll be the guinea pig. Yeah. And so she was like, you know, I want you to tell me about all the stress that's been going on in your life. And I was like, you know, my life's fine. There's nothing going on. And she's like, no, I want you to tell me, like, just tell me what, you know, what's been going on. I said, well, all my friends graduated. I was in a 5-year master's program. So I did my bachelor's and my master's in 5 years. So all of my undergrad friends had graduated. So I was living by myself. The place I was living in was kind of dark and gloomy. So, you know, like, especially in the winter in the Midwest, it wasn't especially like a bright time of year. Yeah. And my boyfriend dumped me and she's like, oh, it sounds like nothing is stressful in your life. And I was like, okay. And so she just had me like sit there and breathe for a few minutes. And I just started crying. My back got like released. And I was just like, okay, that was weird. And then I worked with her a few more times, and I don't think she did specifically TMS stuff, but I was like, my back pain didn't come back. And so I was looking into, and part of that was at that point, I started looking into John Sarno and back pain and why some people have back pain despite not having structural, you know, issues, or maybe they have structural issues, but those aren't the problem. Yep. And so I started doing a lot of just noticing, you know, the stresses I was experiencing, and was that really, you know, the cause of my pain? And my pain never came back.
What do you now? It sounded so easy how you explained it there, but was that at all like a tough hurdle for you to make, having it? Because one thing I tend to find is that people that have athletic backgrounds and they're athletes, they do some kind of sport or they're lifters or whatever, getting past this idea that everything is anatomical and everything is physical is incredibly challenging for many of them. So did you have that kind of hurdle or resistance, or were you pretty, you know, were you pretty, like, for instance, when I was first told by a doctor that this could be stress related, I sort of was okay to hear it at the time, but that was only because I'd exhausted everything else, and the way she explained it to me was very different. If I would have heard that for the same thing 3 months prior, I would have thought they were nuts and stupid and I would have reported them and all that kind of stuff. So did you have some internal resistance or were you like, no, that makes a lot of sense?
During that kind of part of my life, I was kind of in this yoga meditation phase. So I was studying a lot about, you know, chakras and energy and stuff. And so to me at that point, I think that's why it like clicked so quick for me. Cause it was just like, oh, all right, this is just, you know, this is just stress energy that I'm holding in my body. Yeah. I don't need to hold it there anymore. And so like at that point in my life, I think, you know, I just was just like, it's fine. But, fast forward, I got more into the physical, you know, physicality. And, you know, then I shut that part down, which is, you know, probably why it kind of sparked back up in my body again in other ways.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to that in a second. One thing I'm curious about, because it just came to me, and I want to make sure I ask you. So it's not really, this isn't really relating necessarily what you're talking about, but I'm super curious because you've got the coaching background. Would you say that having a knowledge or, you know, having a really deep understanding of TMS work and that a lot of these pains and chronic issues that people tend to feel, especially when it comes to things like back pain and such, that the result is not necessarily going to be something physical. So let me give you an example. I have a couple of friends that I've lifted with or whatever for years, and when they get a physical issue or a pain and I kind of know who they are as a person, it's not like I'm outwardly rolling my eyes, but I'm sort of thinking to myself like, that's definitely, and they're taking it so super seriously and all this kind of stuff. And I get it and it hurts, but almost like my empathy is shot. Whereas maybe it was much stronger 7 or 8 years ago. Do you have that and we're all human. Have you had those feelings as a coach where you're kind of like, this is definitely something. And, Does that make sense at all? A lack of empathy from learning this stuff?
So I think my empathy comes from the fact that I know they're in pain and they're unwilling to admit it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so, yes, it's hard for me to sit there and go, okay, you have more control over this. You don't have to keep going to your chiropractor. But I also know that when I have told people about it, some people are very resistant. And so I kind of have to sneak in the back door type of thing. Like, how do I get this into the conversation and get them to realize it? Because me telling them usually shuts the door because like you said, it a lot of people think, well, maybe you're minimizing my pain or you're minimizing what I'm going through because, you know, this can be structural, and you just because it was not structural for you doesn't mean it's not structural for me.
Yeah.
And so I would say it is hard because it's like, I think there's so much stress in the last couple of years. And I see, you know, so many people joining these groups and wanting help for their pain. And I'm just like, there's a way out. But I think until people are ready to see it for themselves, they have that suffering. Like, I know for me, had I not gone through a lot of suffering, I wouldn't have accepted it either. I was like, I had to like go, like you said, I had to go through every avenue of going, nope, but this didn't help. This blood work didn't, you know, show anything before I was finally ready to realize. And so sometimes it's like, I'm okay with their suffering because I feel like that's what causes people to change.
Selfishly, one of the jokes that I've made a lot since the pandemic began is the only positive thing to me that the pandemic brought was it minimized the large family gatherings where everyone sat around and talked about all the pains that they, all the pains and issues that they have.
Yes.
And I was thinking about it because we're having our the first, like, There's been some holdouts in the family, but we have not all gotten together for a big dinner since before the pandemic started, meaning my brother and his wife and his kids and my parents and us and all that kind of stuff. Because certain people are just holdouts and feel like COVID's everywhere and it's going to kill them. And it definitely has, it's caused a lot of strife for over a million people in the United States. But at the same time, you know, I'd love to have a big family dinner, and our favorite restaurant as a family is closing on June 30th. And so we're kind of getting in every possible last moment that we can eat there. We've eaten there. And then this Monday, I made reservations for this Monday, and I had texted somebody that was supposed to come, and they had said that they haven't eaten at a restaurant in over 2 years. And so they're going to have to think about it. They're going to have to talk back and forth. And I'm just kind of like, Like, you know, I, but then I was remembering, hey, when we all get together for dinner, it's totally going to be how it was pre-pandemic, where everybody's going to talk about their pain and I'm going to have to tune out or I'm going to get super annoyed. That's just kind of how
it would go. But I think that's like, I don't know what it is, but I think people are more comfortable talking about their pain than what's going well in their lives. And I think, you know, it's like, you know, someone starts talking about it and then someone's like, oh my gosh, yeah, I totally get that. And then they go down their story and then it's, you know, and it's just like, I don't know what it is, but I definitely hear you. And it's, yeah, I'm grateful for not a lot of big gatherings.
Yeah. when we sit around the table, my wife, my two daughters and I, when we sit around the table and have dinner together every night, it's genius. The question that my wife always asks, maybe we'll try this on Monday, see how it works with adults. But my wife will go around the table and just say, Zoe, what was the best part of your day? And then she'll say, yes. And then you ask Audrey, what's the best part of your day? And for Audrey, it's usually like what she had for snack, what she had for lunch, like, which is fine. That's perfect. And you know, what was the best part of your day? Maybe I'll try that on Monday. I'll have to put that into, and maybe to take the edge off, I'll have one of my daughters be the ones to say it.
Well, but it makes sense because our brains are hardwired to like avoid danger. And so we always, our brains tend to focus on what's wrong because we want to avoid things that could cause us harm. Mm-hmm. But then when you ask people how they are, it's usually that's the first thing, unless you are saying what's the best part, our brains want to, are, you know, kind of hardwired to go to what's going wrong or what are the danger signals in my life, not what's amazing. And so my husband and I do the same thing because we noticed that we would do that sometimes and we're like, this brings our energy down. Let's talk about the best things that happened today.
Well, I'll tell you, this podcast has 210 written reviews on iTunes. Three of those are 1-star reviews. And guess which reviews I go back and read the most? it's the person that says that I'm an ageist. And then there's one that said my theme music is insensitive to listeners. And those are the ones that I go back and read because that's how we're hardwired. That's how we're programmed.
Exactly.
We've got a few more minutes here. I want to get into, because they're the really sort of one of the secret sauces of this interview, and this has been wonderful, by the way, is Rebecca Tolan had talked about this post-viral symptoms and issues that you were having 20 mm-hmm. years after, or I'm assuming roughly 20 years after the back pain, and then you applied some TMS work to something that we wouldn't typically think of as TMS being able to help. So tell us about it.
Yeah, so it actually built up for about 2 years. So right after I finished competing and I won the world championship in 2018 and was like, okay, I'm done beating up my body like this. This was my last show. I got some kind of flu and it put me down for like a month. And I was just like, okay, this maybe I just needed more recovery after competing. I just needed more off time. So all of 2019, I just kept getting bouts of the flu. It would knock me out for a month. Then I'd build up strength for a couple of months and then it would just keep happening. Then, you know, 2020 happened. My dad got cancer. He ended up passing away. We moved, we sold our house, moved across the country. Like all the stress kept happening. And then I got the flu again. And this time I couldn't recover. It was like 8-12 weeks later and I'm still out of breath, can't hardly function other than to just go to work and then sleep. And then I had what seemed to be an allergic reaction where my heart rate started racing to like 175, just laying in bed. And I was just like, my body was just completely freaking out. You know, I would get chills, I couldn't eat anything without my mouth swelling up. And I was like, this is just nuts. And so I went through all this blood, you know, I went to the urgent care. They couldn't find anything on an EKG. I got blood work done with them. I got blood, like full panels of blood work done with a doctor. An ENT looked down my throat to make sure there wasn't any, you know, blockages in my throat that was making everything swell up. And she said everything looked fine. And I'm like, okay, everything looks fine, but this is not fine. Like, I do not feel fine. And so I went down all these different diagnoses of like mast cell disorder, histamine intolerance, like everything. And I was just like, you know, I was down to eating very few foods. and losing weight like crazy. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. And then I listened to a podcast or a, I think an interview on YouTube. I was just looking up like long COVID, and I don't think I had COVID, but you know, I did antibody testing and didn't have it afterwards. So I was like, I don't think this has been going on for years. So I don't think this is it, but just found out, like, just was seeing what are people doing. And someone brought up TMS for post-viral. And I was like, oh my God, like for everything that I've gone through in the past couple of years, like this makes complete sense. And so I just applied everything I knew. I was journaling several times a day, meditating, just doing all the stuff I knew I needed to do. And like, it took probably 10 to 14 days and my symptoms like went away.
That's phenomenal. Cause we're talking, you had said this went on for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then 10 to 14 days. Did you, cause again, I had asked with the back pain stuff, was that hard for you to grasp? But it sounds like this absolutely was not hard to grasp, but it was almost just like a light bulb moment for you.
I fought it for like 4 months because I was looking for a physical cause, because I thought, you know, this has been happening over and over again. And TMS, I mean, you know, it's kind of like you feel better. I kind of was like, I don't need this anymore, right? Yeah. This was 20 years ago. So I literally, like, I had given my John Sarno books to someone else because, you know, I wanted someone else to benefit from it. And I didn't have back pain anymore. And 20 years ago, he expanded to other muscular systems, but I don't think he was talking as much about the post-viral and, you know, all those kinds of other things. So, but once I saw that interview, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, how could I not see this? And so I had, you know, I questioned myself a few times because symptoms would flare back up really bad. And I'd be like, okay, I'm fooling myself. There's something medical going on. And then I was just like, okay, just stay with the program. You can always go do more medical testing. Just see, you know, if you can calm your system down, see what happens. And, you know, it worked.
Yeah. And that's something that, that I think about often too, is that with what you were saying, that there's flare-ups that are happening. You can always go get more medical testing. And the fact that there are repeated flare-ups a lot of times is enough to really put enough doubt in somebody's mind that there's no way that this can be a mind-body thing. But if you sort of flip the script and you just say to yourself, well, but why would there even be a waxing and waning of symptoms of anything, yeah, right? Like what is it? And some people can, you know, then they can say like, oh, well, I smelled milk, or I like some, they'll have some kind of a trigger maybe that would have, or the pollen's in the air, whatever. but oftentimes, like if you really sit down and think about it, hey, like any waxing, and Dr. Schubiner told me this, he said any waxing and waning of symptoms, that case is closed, it's a mind body thing outside of cancer, tumors, fractures, which is very easy to usually go and get tested for. Like you can usually test if there's a can. I was just talking to somebody earlier today that I'm trying to find my primary care doctor retired, and I'm trying to find somebody, and the earliest appointment I could get was November. You know, just to get an annual blood work done. What are my white blood cells? Basically is kind of what, liver enzymes, like stuff like that. Stuff would pop up on a blood test. And so continuing to go and get, I kind of feel like the more obscure the syndrome and the more obscure the testing you have to do, probably the most likely it is that it's BS. Whereas the simplest tests, like, you know, if your leg is fractured, you can get an X-ray and it shows you that. And that's really all that you need to know. That it's really kind of interesting. There is so much advanced medical testing. I read a book a few years ago called Overdiagnosed, and it was entirely about this notion that we've gotten so much better at imaging, testing, diagnosing in the last 25 years. And it gave this litany of different conditions, but that the treatment and outcomes haven't changed at all. We've diagnosed way more, but the same amount of people are suffering, dying, or whatever from ailments. And I think that, you know, diagnostics in that case they're not good for us.
No, because they make you obsessed that there might be, you know, there might be something wrong. Oh, this, you know, I even had like one of my inflammation markers came back as slightly positive. And so, oh, you might have lupus, you might have this. And it was just like, you know, there's, you know, a margin of error even in testing. And yep. So you have, then you get fixated on this diagnosis, which then increases stress. And if you look at, I mean, it's no surprise that so many people are suffering. If you just look, you know, technology is supposed to make our lives less stressful, but because, you know, we have so many modalities of communicating with people and people expect things immediately. It's no wonder people are under stress all the time. And, you know, especially with what I was going through, it was like every system in my body is revolting. Like there's not really a disease that causes that other than stress. You know, it's just like, if you have like eat something that your body's sensitive to, okay, you'll have digestive issues, but you don't have like a full body, like everything's freaking out just from eating something. So,
yeah. And that, you know, that's another thing too, is there was a chiropractor once that told me, it's funny. I go back when I was doctor jumping and physical therapist jumping and kind of seeking all these different medical interventions for so many years. There are these little nuggets of information that sort of each one of them said along the lines that makes a lot of sense from a TMS perspective, even if they were having me do core strengthening or, you know, whatever sort of thing they would prescribe, but really fit into like a TMS piece, like just little nuggets. And I remember it's just like what you're saying. I had said to this chiropractor, like I have these trigger points now all over my shoulders, my back, my neck, my all this. And he was like, what are the odds that you suddenly have a lot of trigger points that have just developed in all these places across your body, that these are all a bunch of isolated problems, or there's one central issue? And then he went on to tell me about like a lack of B vitamins and take a bunch of these supplements and all this kind of stuff. So that was down the wrong road. However, the first part of that was absolutely correct, that there's something central. And the thing that's central is the nervous system, which is that's the stress, the parasympathetic, sympathetic, which is what you were talking about a half hour ago.
Yeah.
this has been awesome. It's great to get to know you a little bit. Is there a certain place online that people can go and learn more about you, a website or anything like that?
You know, since I, all this stuff happened, I kind of just withdrew from a lot of stuff. You know, I'm sure you could find me on Facebook or something. Yeah. Other than that, I kind of am just trying to simplify my life. I have a few clients that I still coach, and, you know, maybe in the future, if people really want coaching from me, I'd be happy to do it. But, I've just kind of just figured out how to simplify my life so that I can focus on what's important, get my health back, get my strength back, and just focus on being, because I'm so much of a doer. Yeah. And I think it gets in me into trouble a lot.
Yeah. You take a little bit and then you want to run a mile or 100 miles an hour. we'll hang on the line. I want to chat with you after I hit stop. So we'll do a fake outro here and then we can chat. But Chrissy, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Eddie.
Okay, that is it. That was awesome. What a great background you've got. You know what I would love to do, if it's possible, I ask every guest to do this. I would love, just, you can drop it to me in a Facebook message or an email. It's up to you. But putting in like particular accolades, like which years you were a world champion, that kind of thing. I'm doing some Googling, and I can, like, there's a website on here that's pretty that it's pretty extensive, but it looks like maybe it stopped being touched in 2012. And so I know you've done stuff since then. So that would be great. And then also, if you can think of what you would want the title of this podcast to be, and I'd say give that a couple of days to think about it. Something will come to mind, but this is either going to air next week or the following.
Sounds great.
Yeah, cool. Okay, great. Well, thanks, Chrissy. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Eddie. Okay, it's great to chat with you.
Yeah, you too.
Bye.